Chapter 4. Wind. Differences in temperature create differences in pressure. These pressure differences drive a complex system of winds in a never-ending attempt to reach equilibrium. Wind also transports water vapor and spreads fog, clouds, and precipitation. To help you relate wind to pressure patterns and the movement of weather systems, this chapter explains convection and the pressure gradient force, describes the effects of the Coriolis and frictional forces, relates convection and these forces to the general circulation, discusses local and small-scale wind systems, introduces you to wind shear, and associates wind with weather. Note, frequently throughout this book, we refer to air as warm, cool, or cold. These terms refer to relative temperatures and not to any fixed temperature reference or to temperatures as they might affect our comfort. For example, compare air at minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit to air at 0 degrees Fahrenheit. Relative to each other, the minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit air is cool and the 0 degree Fahrenheit warm. 90 degrees Fahrenheit would be cool or cold relative to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Convection. When two surfaces are heated unequally, they heat the overlying air unevenly. The warmer air expands and becomes lighter or less dense than the cool air. The more dense, cool air is drawn to the ground by its greater gravitational force, lifting or forcing the warm air upward as much as oil is forced to the top of water when the two are mixed. The rising air spreads and cools, eventually descending to complete the convective circulation. As long as the uneven heating persists, convection maintains a continuous convective current. The horizontal airflow in a convective current is wind. Convection of both large and small scales account for systems ranging from hemispheric circulation down to local eddies. This horizontal flow, wind, is sometimes called advection. However, the term advection more commonly applies to the transport of atmospheric properties by the wind, i.e. warm advection, cold advection, advection of water vapor, etc. Pressure gradient force. Pressure differences must create a force in order to drive the wind. This force is the pressure gradient force. The force is from higher pressure to lower pressure and is perpendicular to isobars or contours. Whenever a pressure difference develops over an area, the pressure gradient force begins moving the air directly across the isobars. The closer the spacing of isobars, the stronger is the pressure gradient force. The stronger the pressure gradient force, the stronger is the wind. Thus, closely spaced isobars mean strong winds. Widely spaced isobars mean lighter wind. From a pressure analysis, you can get a general idea of wind speed from contour or isobar spacing. Because of uneven heating of the Earth, surface pressure is low in warm equatorial regions and high in cold polar regions. A pressure gradient develops from the poles to the equator. If the Earth did not rotate, this pressure gradient force would be the only force acting on the wind. Circulation would be two giant hemispheric convective currents. Cold air would sink at the poles. Wind would blow straight from the poles to the equator. Warm air at the equator would be forced upward, and high-level winds would blow directly toward the poles. However, the Earth does rotate, and because of its rotation, this simple circulation pattern is greatly distorted. Coriolis force. A moving mass travels in a straight line until acted on by some outside force. However, if one views the moving mass from a rotating platform, the path of the moving mass, relative to the platform, appears to be deflected or curved. To illustrate, start rotating the turntable of a record player. Then, using a piece of chalk and a ruler, draw a straight line from the center of the outer edge of the turntable. To you, the chalk traveled in a straight line. Now, stop the turntable. On it, the line spirals outward from the center. To a viewer on the turntable, some apparent force deflected the chalk to the right. A similar apparent force deflects moving particles on the Earth. Because the Earth is spherical, the deflective force is much more complex than the simple turntable example. Although the force is termed apparent, to us on Earth it is very real. The principle was first explained by a Frenchman, Coriolis, and carries his name, the Coriolis force. The Coriolis force affects the paths of aircraft, missiles, flying birds, ocean currents, and, most important to the study of weather, air currents. The force deflects air to the right in the northern hemisphere and to the left in the southern hemisphere. This book concentrates mostly on the deflection to the right in the northern hemisphere. Coriolis force is at a right angle to the wind direction and directly proportional to wind speed, that is, as wind speed increases, Coriolis force increases. At a given latitude, double the wind speed, and you double the Coriolis force. Why at a given latitude? Coriolis force varies with latitude from zero at the equator to a maximum at the poles. It influences wind direction everywhere except immediately at the equator, but the effects are more pronounced in middle and high latitudes. Remember that the pressure gradient force drives the wind and is perpendicular to isobars. When a pressure gradient force is first established, wind begins to blow from higher to lower pressure directly across the isobars. However, the instant air begins moving, Coriolis force deflects it to the right. Soon, the wind is deflected a full 90 degrees and is parallel to the isobars or contours. At this time, Coriolis force exactly balances pressure gradient force. With the forces in balance, wind will remain parallel to isobars or contours. Surface friction disrupts this balance, as we discuss later. But first, let's see how Coriolis force distorts the fictitious global circulation mentioned earlier. The general circulation. As air is forced aloft at the equator and begins its high-level trek northward, the Coriolis force turns it to the right in the northern hemisphere, or to the east. Wind becomes westerly at about 30 degrees north latitude, temporarily blocking further northward movement. Similarly, the air over the poles begins its low-level journey southward toward the equator. It likewise is deflected to the right and becomes an east wind, halting for a while its southerly progress. As a result, air literally piles up at about 30 and 60 degrees latitude in both hemispheres. The added weight of the air increases the pressure into semi-permanent high-pressure belts. The building of these high-pressure belts creates a temporary impasse, disrupting the simple convective transfer between the equator and the poles. The restless atmosphere cannot live with this impasse in its effort to reach equilibrium. Something has to give. Huge masses of air begin overturning in middle latitudes to complete the exchange. Large masses of cold air break through the northern barrier, plunging southward toward the tropics. Large mid-latitude storms develop between cold outbreaks and carry warm air northward. The result is a mid-latitude band of migratory storms with ever-changing weather. Since pressure differences cause wind, seasonal pressure variations determine, to a great extent, the areas of these cold air outbreaks and mid-latitude storms. But seasonal pressure variations are largely due to seasonal temperature changes. We have learned that, at the surface, warm temperatures, to a great extent, determine low pressure, and cold temperatures, high pressure. We have also learned that seasonal temperature changes over continents are much greater than over warm oceans. During summer, warm continents tend to be areas of low pressure, and the relatively cool oceans, high pressure. In winter, the reverse is true. High pressure over the cold continents and low pressure over the relatively warm oceans. The same pressure variations occur in the warm and cold seasons of the southern hemisphere, although the effect is not as pronounced because of the much larger water areas of the southern hemisphere. Cold outbreaks are strongest in the cold season and are predominantly from cold continental areas. Summer outbreaks are weaker and more likely to originate from cool water surfaces. Since these outbreaks are masses of cool, dense air, they characteristically are high-pressure areas. As the air tries to blow outward from the high pressure, it is deflected to the right by the Coriolis force. Thus, the wind around a high blows clockwise. The high pressure, with its associated wind system, is an anticyclone. The storms that develop between high-pressure systems are characterized by low pressure. As winds try to blow inward toward the center of low pressure, they are deflected to the right. Thus, the wind around a low is counterclockwise. The low pressure and its wind system is a cyclone. The winds are clockwise around highs and counterclockwise around lows. The high pressure belt, at around 30 degrees north latitude, forces air outward at the surface to the north and to the south. The northbound air becomes entrained into the mid-latitude storms. The southward moving air is again deflected by the Coriolis force, becoming the well-known subtropical northeast trade winds. In mid-latitudes, high-level winds are predominantly from the west and are known as the prevailing westerlies. Polar easterlies dominate low-level circulation north of about 60 degrees latitude. Northeasterly trade winds carry tropical storms from east to west. The prevailing westerlies drive mid-latitude storms generally from west to east. Few major storm systems develop in the comparatively small Arctic region. The chief influence of the polar easterlies is their contribution to the development of mid-latitude storms. Our discussion so far has said nothing about friction. Wind flow patterns aloft follow isobars or contours where friction has little effect. We cannot, however, neglect friction near the surface. Friction. Friction between the wind and the terrain surface slows the wind. The rougher the terrain, the greater is the frictional effect. Also, the stronger the wind speed, the greater is the friction. One may not think of friction as a force, but it is a very real and effective force, always acting opposite to the wind direction. As frictional force slows the wind speed, Coriolis force decreases. However, friction does not affect pressure gradient force. Pressure gradient and Coriolis forces are no longer in balance. The stronger pressure gradient force turns the wind at an angle across the isobars toward lower pressure until the three forces balance. Frictional and Coriolis forces combine to just balance pressure gradient force. Surface wind spirals outward from high pressure into low pressure, crossing isobars at an angle. The angle of surface wind to isobars is about 10 degrees over water, increasing with roughness of terrain. In mountainous regions, one often has difficulty relating surface wind to pressure gradient because of immense friction and also because of local terrain effects on pressure. The jet stream. A discussion of the general circulation is incomplete when it does not mention the jet stream. Winds on the average increase with height throughout the troposphere, culminating in a maximum near the level of the tropopause. These maximum winds tend to be further concentrated in narrow bands. A jet stream, then, is a narrow band of strong winds meandering through the atmosphere at a level near the tropopause. Since it is of interest primarily to high-level flight, Further discussion of the jet stream is reserved for Chapter 13, High Altitude Weather. Local and small-scale winds. Until now, we have dealt only with the general circulation and major wind systems. Local terrain features such as mountains and shorelines influence local winds and weather. Mountain and valley winds. In the daytime, air next to a mountain slope is heated by contact with the ground as it receives radiation from the sun. This air usually becomes warmer than the air at the same altitude, but farther from the slope. Colder, dense air in the surroundings settles downward and forces the warmer air near the ground up the mountain slope. This wind is a valley wind, so called because the air is flowing up out of the valley. At night, the air in contact with the mountain slope is cooled by terrestrial radiation and becomes heavier than the surrounding air. It sinks along the slope, producing the mountain wind, which flows like water down the mountain slope. Mountain winds are usually stronger than valley winds, especially in winter. The mountain wind often continues down the more gentle slopes of canyons and valleys, and in such cases takes the name drainage wind. It can become quite strong over some terrain conditions, and in extreme cases can become hazardous when flowing through canyon restrictions, as discussed in Chapter 9. Katabatic wind. A katabatic wind is any wind blowing down an incline when the incline is influential in causing the wind. Thus, the mountain wind is a katabatic wind. Any katabatic wind originates because cold, heavy air spills down sloping terrain, displacing warmer, less dense air ahead of it. Air is heated and dried as it flows down slope, as we will study in later chapters. Sometimes the descending air becomes warmer than the air it replaces. Many katabatic winds recurring in local areas have been given colorful names to highlight their dramatic local effect. Some of these are the Bora, a cold northerly wind blowing from the Alps to the Mediterranean coast. The Chinook, a warm wind down the east slope of the Rocky Mountains, often reaching hundreds of miles into the high plains. The Taku, a cold wind in Alaska blowing off the Taku Glacier. And the Santa Ana, a warm wind descending from the Sierras into the Santa Ana Valley of California. Land and sea breezes. As frequently stated earlier, land surfaces warm and cool more rapidly than do water surfaces. Therefore, land is warmer than the sea during the day. Wind blows from the cold water to warm land, the sea breeze, so called because it blows from the sea. At night, the wind reverses, blows from cool land to warmer water, and creates a land breeze. Land and sea breezes develop only when the overall pressure gradient is weak. Wind with a stronger pressure gradient mixes the air so rapidly that local temperature and pressure gradients do not develop along the shoreline. Wind shear. Rubbing two objects against each other creates friction. If the objects are solid, no exchange of mass occurs between the two. However, if the objects are fluid currents, friction creates eddies along a common shallow mixing zone, and a mass transfer takes place in the shallow mixing layer. This zone of induced eddies and mixing is a shear zone. Chapter 9 relates wind shear to turbulence. Wind, pressure systems, and weather. We have already shown that wind speed is proportional to the spacing of isobars or contours on a weather map. However, with the same spacing, wind speed at the surface will be less than aloft because of surface friction. You also can determine wind direction from a weather map. If you face along an isobar or contour with lower pressure on your left, wind will be blowing in the direction you are facing. On a surface map, wind will cross the isobar at an angle toward lower pressure. On an upper air chart, it will be parallel to the contour. Wind blows counterclockwise, northern hemisphere, around a low and clockwise around a high. At the surface, where winds cross the isobars at an angle, you can see a transport of air from high to low pressure. Although winds are virtually parallel to contours on an upper air chart, there still is a slow transport of air from high to low pressure. At the surface, where air converges into a low, it cannot go outward against the pressure gradient, nor can it go downward into the ground. It must go upward. Therefore, a low or trough is an area of rising air. Note, you may recall that earlier we said air piles up in the vicinity of 30 degrees latitude, increasing pressure and forming the subtropical high-pressure belt. Why, then, does not air flowing into a low or trough increase pressure and fill the system? Dynamic forces maintain the low or trough, and these forces differ from the forces that maintain the subtropical high. Rising air is conductive to cloudiness and precipitation, thus we have the general association of low pressure, bad weather. Reasons for the inclement weather are developed in later chapters. By similar reasoning, air moving out of a high or ridge depletes the quantity of air. Highs and ridges, therefore, are areas of descending air. Descending air favors dissipation of cloudiness, hence the associated high pressure, good weather. Many times, weather is more closely associated with an upper air pattern than with features shown by the surface map. Although features in the two charts are related, they seldom are identical. A weak surface system often loses its identity in the upper air pattern, while another system may be more evident on the upper air chart than on the surface map. Widespread cloudiness and precipitation often develop in advance of an upper trough or low. A line of showers and thunderstorms is not uncommon with a trough aloft, even though the surface pressure pattern shows little or no cause for the development. On the other hand, downward motion in a high or ridge places a cap on convection, preventing any upward motion. Air may become stagnant in a high, trap moisture and contamination in low levels, and restrict ceiling and visibility. Low stratus, fog, haze, and smoke are not uncommon in high-pressure areas. However, a high or ridge aloft with moderate surface winds most often produces good flying weather. Highs and lows tend to lean from the surface into the upper atmosphere. Due to this slope, winds aloft often blow across the associated surface systems. Upper winds tend to steer surface systems in the general direction of the upper wind flow. An intense, cold, low-pressure vortex leans less than does a weaker system. The intense low becomes oriented almost vertically and is clearly evident on both surface and upper air charts. Upper winds encircle the surface low and do not blow across it. Thus, the storm moves very slowly and usually causes an extensive and persistent area of clouds, precipitation, strong winds, and generally adverse flying weather. The term cold low, sometimes used by the weatherman, describes such a system. A contrasting analogy to the cold low is the thermal low. A dry, sunny region becomes quite warm from intense surface heating, thus generating a surface low pressure area. The warm air is carried to high levels by convection, but cloudiness is scant because of lack of moisture. Since in warm air, pressure decreases slowly with altitude, the warm surface low is not evident at upper levels. Unlike the cold low, the thermal low is relatively shallow, with weak pressure gradients and no well-defined cyclonic circulation. It generally supports good flying weather. However, during the heat of the day, one must be alert for high-density altitude and convective turbulence. We have cited three exceptions to the low-pressure, bad weather, high pressure good weather rule. 1. Cloudiness and precipitation with an upper air trough or low not evident on the surface chart. 2. The contaminated high. And 3. The thermal low. As this book progresses, you can further relate weather systems more specifically to flight operations.